All right. With Aries, we started with new change. And then Taurus tried to correct with stability. And then bouncing back and forth between them with variability, we had Gemini. And in order to try to correct from all that variability, Cancer tried to contain things. But you can only contain so much without things bursting out, and Leo and the fifth house represent expression. But inside of the expression is an internal logic, and that internal logic is represented by Virgo. But an internal logic means that there is some kind of symmetry. And so with Libra, we have an internal balance. And with Scorpio, since it's a closed system, you have to reuse things. So everything is internal recycling. And then Sagittarius, it has enough of this internality, and it wants to be outward. So it represents a projection. Capricorn, as we saw, represented a deposit that came as a result of that. And Aquarius represented innovation. Let's do something completely new. Well, Pisces has an attitude about it all that in some ways it doesn't really care about the whole business. And it's willing to sacrifice the whole business. And that kind of sacrifice, especially if there is self-sacrifice involved, is very Piscean. Sagittarius likes edification, lifting people up to a higher state. Capricorn likes dignification. Everybody must have their proper dignity. Aquarius will take you as you are. As long as you're human, it's a humanization of everything. But Pisces, everything has to be divine. If anything, it deifies people, and it deifies people in ways that are sometimes quite unrealistic. In the body, we said that general metabolism was ruled by Sagittarius, and that what results from the heat of that metabolism is an aging process, a process of turning things to stone, and that is represented by Capricorn. And we said that going beyond the physical, the vitality or the vitalization is what is indicated by Aquarius. Well, Pisces goes beyond everything else, even beyond vitality, and it goes into the soul and the soul's relation to health. So anything that is psychosomatic, whether it is positive or negative, is a Piscean kind of principle. Sagittarius aspires. Capricorn has ambition. Aquarius has inspiration, transcendent inspiration. Pisces, it's too much effort to do any or all of those, and it just surrenders. It loves to surrender itself to the entire cosmos, and if, and if it can become formless, that's all the better. Goodness is a quality that we associate with Sagittarius. Propriety, or doing things the proper way, is what we associate with Capricorn. A value for Aquarius is altruism. For Pisces, the value is divine union. Don't mess around with anything in between. Just go for the divine union and forget about everything else. Sagittarius works by approval. There's a specialized kind of approval for Capricorn, and that represents paternalism. Aquarius represents friendship. The way Pisces works, one of its positive qualities is that it blesses things. Almost think that the Irish people were completely Piscean because they like to drink and bless things. I'm not
sure.
There is a joke about that, about the different nationalities. And that is at the, this is probably never going on TV, but at the UN building, they were talking and out in front, and they got to talking about the Garden of Eden story. And an Englishman said that the Adam and Eve had to have been English, having only one apple, and had to been English because they were altruistic. They had only one apple, and they shared it between them. And the French person said that, no, they had to have been French because only a French woman would sell her body for an apple. And the Russian said, no, they had to have been Russians because only Russians could be naked with only an apple to eat and be told they were in paradise. Aries in the first house represent a pioneer state. Taurus in the second house represent settlement. Gemini in the third house represent practicalities, little pragmatic things that you have to do to get by. Cancer in the fourth house represent the foundations of dynasty, when you start to build your family unit. Then the first achievement comes in the horoscope with Leo and the fifth house. But after you have achieved, you think you can do even better. So methodical improvement is what is indicated by Virgo and the sixth house. But you have to be able to judge when you're being methodical and when you're going overboard. So judgment and judicial qualities are indicated by the seventh house and Libra. Of course, we don't always do things wrong, and so sometimes there is an attitude of punishment. And so the quality of punishment is a Scorpio and an eighth house kind of quality. After that, you think about improving the lot of people, and you think about redemption and upliftment, and those are Sagittarius and ninth house qualities. But in all of that, when you start having a philosophy and you start having a whole society, the quality of urbanization comes in. Everything has to be urbane and everything has to be slick for everyone. Then Aquarius comes along and says, no, it belongs to everyone. Therefore, we should have democratization. Aquarius represents democratization, as does the 11th house. But with democratization, a lot of structure is lost. Democratization almost tends in the direction of anarchy. And so with Pisces and the 12th house, you have social collapse. And it's the end of things for a new cycle to begin. Scorpio represents reaction. Sagittarius represents affirmation. Then along comes Capricorn, and it works by negation. Aquarius works by befriending. But Pisces has one of the very best qualities in the entire zodiac. It works through compassion. It is whatever is in you is in me. And even the distinctions between you and I don't really count. We are sort of like in one gigantic compassionate slurry of things. The eighth house represents loss. And the ninth house represents transcendence after loss. And the tenth house represents honor, what you are accorded for what you have done to the world or for the world. The 11th house represents intuition. It's a totally new way of looking at society and the world. But Pisces has a strange view of the world. It has a pious view of the world. And whether it is obviously there or not, they try to see everything in the world happening with piety. Let's look at the opposites. The last pair of opposites are Virgo and Pisces and the 6th and 12th house. Virgo is one of those signs of doubt. It is counterbalanced by Pisces, which is a sign that will believe anything. It's the true believer's sign. The sixth house represents opportunities for service. The 12th house represents opportunities for involuntary service. Duty. You have to do your duty whether you like it or not. Virgo is critical, and it's stark, and it's very, yes, is this true or no? Pisces is much more forgiving, so forgiving that it's even willing to be vague. Pisceans are the people that like that term, fuzzy logic. The Virgo is particular, even the little particles of sand. But Pisces is general. It wants universals. Universals even without abstract structure if necessary. Virgo is didactic. Pisces is poetic. Sometimes Pisces utter poetic things without even knowing it. In fact, usually they utter poetic things without even knowing it. Virgo in the sixth house work with patterns and organizations. Pisces and the 12th house works with disorganization. We're dealing with the sign of chaos here. Now that we've gotten all the way through, we can make the horoscopical or the zodiacal human. Oh, we didn't put any knees on this person. What is this? Let's not carp about my fish. The symbol is either two fishes tied together by their tails, because in the pictorial zodiac there is an east fish and there is a north fish. And the east fish points in an eastward direction. North fish points in a northward direction, and they're tied together by a chain. And as we said last time, everything from the last third of Capricorn through Pisces is an area in the pictorial zodiac that is called the sea. And so we're dealing about a sea of emotion, of feeling. And lurking beneath the surface of that sea in an unconscious way are fish. And they represent discrete entities. They represent combinations of things in that subconscious or unconscious feeling nature. So they represent complexes. But if we are no longer completely fluid in our consciousness and we have things bound up in complexes, we can't function really well. So the Pisces is the sign that represents being in bondage, or being fated, or being captivated by one thing or another. And very frequently, those emotions are inhibited. And they're inhibited and they're pulling in different directions. So this, like Gemini, is one of the very ambivalent signs. It has a really hard time making up its mind, especially since it doesn't care that much about the mind. It cares about the emotions. So frequently, there's a lot of repression in this sign. And very often, there are soul extremes. The other image is called the Vesica Pisces, and it is the universal arching. It is the elliptical base of all construction, and it represents a Cartesian kind of curve, a curve that holds everything together. And it is a simple line of consciousness that represents a universal. And even fish are sometimes drawn with that way. Sometimes the Vesica Pisces is seen as the all-seeing eye, because we're now dealing with the sign that has the most to do with clairvoyance. If someone is likely to unfold clairvoyance, they're likely to have strong foci in Pisces, or Pisces rising, or something like that. The proper pronunciation in the Webster's is Pisces. But if I use that pronunciation, people get a little uneasy, so I so I don't use that one. When we talk about the animals, we obviously have to talk about fish. And there are more different kinds of fish than there are birds, and there are all kinds of sub-rulerships. So we can only talk about the generals, because there are just too many different kinds of fish to go into. Now, of all of the animals that we deal with, the fish are the most elemental. Birds fly in the air, but they will hop on the ground if they need to. Some animals burrow underground, but they need air. And anything that lives needs water. Without water, life cannot take place on our planet. But the water that the fish likes is the entire element. The watery signs are, in general, the most elemental bound signs of all. They can't feel something. They don't feel, they can't relate to it. Obviously, fish are very elusive. If you put them in the air or on the earth, they're awkward. They can't do anything. They die immediately. But in the water, they're graceful. They can move in any direction quite easily. And they can move from a standing position to darting forward with just a little wiggle of the tail. It's really quite something. I had a Pisces girlfriend at one time. And she had a crush on me. I don't know if she really loved me or anything, but she had a crush on me. And we were participating together in a study group at one time, and we were discussing something or another. There were about a dozen people, and she had an idea that she brought up to the group but directed it at my direction. She really wanted to impress me, and she's sitting in her chair going just like this. And she was wiggling her fish's tail. Fish are ballasted, and that is a quality of Pisces. It can adjust to any level of consciousness. Clairvoyance is really the ability to associate your consciousness with the consciousness of something else, another human or even an animal. So it has the ability of taking on air, but it takes on air only for its own ends. It will even use air as a defense. It is, for example, a blowfish that will overinflate itself. Fish are not really good at vision. They don't see things in clear, distinct outlines. They have sort of a blurry vision, but just the motion is enough to frighten them. We're not talking about a sign here with a huge amount of courage or a huge amount of fortitude. It only needs just a little bit of vision in order to run. You know, this is not the high courage sign. Fish very often have big eyes, and they're on the side of their head. We've mentioned that before. That means that they're more likely to be prey than predator. And it's funny that the fish that are predators have their eyes in the front of the head. You look at a northern pike as opposed to a panfish, you can see that the northern pike is the predator. Sometimes they have very bulbous eyes, and sometimes they have pop eyes. And that's often due to thyroid conditions, because mercury is not strong in this sign, and it overcompensates, and it overcompensates usually in thyroid conditions. Pisces rising, or sometimes even sun in Pisces. I'm trying to just give the general ideas, and it can work in various different ways. Fish are very evasive. They're slimy, they're slick, they're sleek. It's very hard to pin down a Pisces with facts. If you're going into something that they dislike, they'll open themselves to you completely if they feel comfortable with you. But if you try to pin them down, they don't like that at all. Fish are a very high variety kind of animal. There are tiny fish so small that you almost can't see them. And there are huge, very large fish, 200- and 300-pound catfish. Their shapes are various different kinds of shapes. And sometimes they're very colorful. And the colorfulness is quite diverse. And colors represent emotionality, and they're willing to shine forth. It's sort of that they're like their scaly plumage, you might say. The classic fish, you might say, for this is the trout, because the trout has the rainbow on its side. And Pisces doesn't want to be limited to only one color. It likes the full spectrum. And in that way, Pisces is a rainbow sign. Likes that variegation. And also rules things like the rainbow people. You know, those people that like to go up into the North Woods or out in the national park somewhere and debauch themselves with no restraint whatsoever. That's that's Pisces. Some fish are transparent. They are complex in their organism. But some of them you can see right through. Even complex Pisces people, no matter how complex they are, you can see right through them. You know, they don't really try to hide things. They're open. I guess they realize in order to see through other people, you have to be open yourself. And Pisces people, especially if they are children, they can understand why other people aren't clairvoyant, because they see, and it's a natural thing for them to see. Fish are stupid. Mercury has its detriment and its fall in Pisces. Belief and faith by far outweigh critical analysis. This is not always a questioning sign. Sometimes you find in very educated people and very intelligent people, the Pisces are very skeptical. And the reason is that they know inwardly that they'll believe anything, and they have to protect that. But fish actually do fall for lures. And after watching my father for 60 years, I know that fish can be psychologized. I have seen him fish with all sorts of people where they're using identical equipment, and sometimes even having their lures or their bait in almost exactly the same place. But my father almost always came back with more fish. And he would talk as he was putting his bait off there, because he knew that by talking he was going to attract the fish. It's a form of suggestion, and Pisces is a really suggestible kind of person. Fish are very streamlined, no legs. Fins are a must, and Pisces people are like that. They like a streamlined life. They don't like that much specialization. Aesthetically, an appendage is a silly-looking thing to them. Fish decay rapidly, and that is sort of under the principle that when something is evolved in a certain way, it's hard to hold it all together. It may even have something to do with the high amount of phosphorus in their body. It is said of the body of Jesus that it wasn't stolen, but that the vibrations had been so high in that body when the Christ was inhabiting it, that when the Christ left, it disintegrated completely within 3 days' time. Fish are very fertile. They are fertile as fertilizer, and they are fertile in their reproduction. I mean, they go at this big times, hundreds and thousands that they spawn. And if you are that defenseless and only speed or sometimes camouflage the only defense you have, you keep the species going by making many, many, many of them. I had a girlfriend that was Libra with Pisces rising. And she not only... Dale was saying, how many girlfriends did he have? another clipping coming. this is cat and mouse with the editor. but she really cared for me, and I never knew it. I have one friend that is an Aries with Aquarius rising, and she thought she was being subtle, but she was obvious. Even being her most subtle, she was obvious. But this woman with the Libra with Pisces rising, when she was being obvious, she told me years later that I was really trying to come on to you, and she said, you didn't get it at all. And she was unusual because she had the sense of decay was very high in her. She had a sense of smell that she could walk into a room and she could tell you what every person was like in the room just by their smell. And she said to me once, when you walk into a class to give to give a class, she says, your odor overpowers everyone else in the room. It's like you overtake them, like even, you know, like it's chemical warfare as much as it is rhetoric. Fish are very curious. They're attracted to almost anything, but they are as shy and as scary as they are curious. So they'll be attracted and go away and be attracted and go away. That's one of the things about Pisces. Pisces, there are two things that Pisces really like to do. One of them is to cry, and the other one is to kiss. And I used to work in a place where there was a lovely fish pond, and there were little tiny guppies in there. And I'd put my hand in there, and I would hold it still. And within 2 or 3 minutes, all the guppies were coming up and kissing my hand. They were wanting salt, but I liked it. You try to get away with things. Some of the amphibians are ruled by Pisces, most notably frogs. They're sort of ungainly with the frog legs, and they also have those big pop eyes. And they're also smooth and sleek. And they have those baleful croakings that they, you know, like it's like there never was a happy frog. All they come out with are sorrowful sounds. They're nocturnal, which is very often the case with people who are introverted. And they're quite ugly. We're talking about the sign here that likes gargoyles. We're talking about the sign that sees something that's so ugly it's beautiful. And it's an unusual principle of aesthetics. It's the sign that likes ugly masses and things like that. And it is also a sign of metamorphosis, not metamorphosis in the same way as Cancer and Leo that produce moths and butterflies kissing a frog and the frog turning into a prince. That is actually based on a principle. We could go into that, but this is already going way too long. Large sea animals are ruled by Pisces. Obviously, the largest of them all, the whales. They're behemoth, and they're big in spirit. And whales are highly intelligent. We're dealing here like genius seems to like Aquarius and Pisces. People who have the sun in either Aquarius or Pisces are more likely to be geniuses by population than any other sign. We daren't say that in front of the Pisces, otherwise they'll smell like fish for all of their egoism about it. But they're highly socialized. They love each other. So it is that kind of a quality that they have. They are capable of suicide, like the opposite sign, Virgo. Whales will beach themselves, and the reasons aren't all known. In some cases, it's because of the Navy zapping them with sound, and they lose their ability to hear inwardly, and sound is very important to the whales. It's what we're doing to the poor whales is a terrible, terrible thing. It's another one of those things. With the exception of orcas, whales are not very ferocious. We mentioned when we talked about Capricorn that a whale is just a shrew that jumped in the water and stayed in the water for a few hundred million years. But as it got bigger and bigger and bigger, it became more and more harmless. And it has that soothing effect, I guess, of the water that does it. You know, it's like taking a bath and never quitting. I'd become a really docile or peaceful kind of person, too, if I spent all my day in the bathtub. And, of course, they have a lot of fats and oils in them. Jupiter rules the sign, and Venus is exalted there, and Jupiter and Venus rules fat and oils. It is for protection. It's a positive kind of protection. They strain their food. They all have teeth or something that they strain their food to keep the big things out. And it's the sieve principle. The character of Pisces is a no-resistance character. And therefore, they're sometimes called the sieve of the zodiac. They are a source of perfume. We're talking about soulfulness here. People who are very highly soulful and spiritually inclined actually smell beautiful. Many of them smell like flowers. And people who have healing done for them by invisible helpers actually even smell roses in the room. So we have here in Pisces, we have both the saint and the faker, the one who would most fake being a saint. And so we have the people who naturally smell nice and the people who will wear way too much perfume. This is the camouflage sign. And whales make all of those very eerie cries, that soulful screeching. You know, they all sound like they're crying, just like frogs sound in their baleful way, and so forth. So we're talking about an animal that is passionate. Seals and sea lions and otters and sea otters and walruses are also ruled by Pisces. They're intelligent and inventive, and they're all happy and playful. This is a sign that either cries or it's playing around. There are all kinds of stories about seals turning into human beings and all those metamorphosis kinds of things. So there is something about the stage. See, Pisces rules people that we call parasites, priests and poets and people like that who seem to offer nothing to society. And a parasite is a state that is between one level and the next. Like a plant, like mistletoe, is a parasite, but it has a desire body like the animals. So it sacrifices one thing to be halfway into the next stage for preparing for the future. And priests and poets who are preparing us for our spiritual existence are ruled by Pisces. And so we have that kind of thing. All right. Here's an animal that is very Pisces-like, the gulls. They're wayward. They're wanderers. They seem purposeless. And they're messy. And they're indiscriminate. We're dealing with the sign here that is not the most clean in either order or in hygienic qualities. This is a sign that sort of likes to let go. And we're dealing with a gullible sign. It is truly that. All of the web-footed birds are ruled by Pisces. We have the dodos, which are no more because they trusted too much. And that's Pisces-like. It'll be taken advantage of. You can pull a con on a Pisces and come back a few days later, and rather than feel that they've been hurt, they'll say, well, it didn't work. You want to try it again? And it's that kind of a thing. The duckbill platypus is a Pisces creature. I don't know if you could call it anything. It's everything all put together, and it's everything put together in a very odd kind of mixture, and that's Pisces also. Ducks are ruled by Pisces. They have that waddling kind of quality, and they squawk a lot, and they're very indiscriminate about food, and they also tend to be pop-eyed. And there's, you know, they fall for decoys, too. You know that some ducks are so stupid that on artificial turf football fields that are blue, that like a whole swarm of ducks came down, and they injured themselves by trying to land on a football field right in the middle of a game. Crazy. Geese are ruled by Pisces. They're honkers. Again, a strange sound. And they're silly. If you ever run into a silly goose, you can almost be sure, a silly goose of a person, you can almost be sure it's going to be a Pisces. They're extremely defensive. They're as defensive as dogs can be. Man, I was intimidated when I was a kid. The neighbors, who was a very good friend of my father from childhood, had geese in their yard. And as a kid, you know, you want to go around and see what's there. And those geese would come at you, man, and I just took off at them. They're also very faithful. Geese are faithful to their partner till the death, and even after the death, they'll protect their partner if their partner has been shot. You don't need to say anything about hunting. It stands for itself what it is. Geese are compassionate. And then there's another special kind of web-footed bird that we have in northern Wisconsin, the loon. It's remote, and it's an eerie kind of bird, and it's extremely shy. And it makes all kinds of eerie cries. And finally, we have the swan, the ugly duckling, which is in its youth ungainly, but extremely graceful in old age. And they're very subject to the bird flu. And swans are dying in Eastern Europe now because of that. They have a rare beauty. And they are said to be comfortable in all elements. And there is a legend about a swan, that when a swan dies, it sings its swan song. It sings it only once in its life, and it sings it just before it dies. The same thing is said to happen with men before they die in the little death. They all sing swan songs to their lovers, and their lovers unite with them just to shut them up. All right. Mythologically, a myth from India, the myth of the black swan, that flies in the night, which represents the ultimate of subtlety. It represents an invisible creative principle. It is a first principle of power in the same way that Scorpio is a first principle of power, but it isn't because of its demanding power, it's because of its subtlety and its power that comes in its sacrifice. It is said that dark space emanates light space. In the earliest creative myths, at least if we can believe Madame Blavatsky, and this is where in folklore the story of the goose that laid the golden egg comes from. It's actually a swan and not a goose, and it is light space that is born out of dark space. And we're not talking about what you see in telescopes. We're talking about an inner space, much different kind. There are other swans that are famous in mythology. There is the swan of Lohengrin and the swan of Leda. And all of them represent graceful beauty. And they represent rare opportunity. The swan is the symbol of the initiate. And if the swan appears to the woman and she doesn't go with it, that's it. You only get one chance at initiation. And if you blow it, you're done. You have to have the character of complete faith. You have to have that belief, that trust of the Pisces in the 12th house. Another one that is shared with Capricorn, the boy and a dolphin. The story of mercy and salvation. Elian Gonzalez. Every now and then you read in the newspaper of a seaman who is thrown overboard and who is saved by a dolphin. And it doesn't happen to anyone. It's only certain special people who are chosen. We have the story of the whale, Jonah and the whale. A story of faith and the story of unavoidable duty. He couldn't escape anywhere. Pisces in cosmological astrology rules this dense physical plane. And being 3 1/2 days in the belly of the whale means being 3 1/2 days locked in the earth and being tempered and being developed soulfully as a consequence of that limitation. Every mythology has stories of leviathans and sea monsters. And they are all referring to entities that one encounters when one enters the spiritual worlds in complete waking consciousness. The entity that is most horrid is the entity of that is called the guardian of the threshold. And it is a being that is composed of the thought forms and desire forms and etheric forms of every unredeemed negative thought that we have ever made from all of our past lives. And we have to face that and say, yes, I have made this monster, and we have to agree to transform that monster into something like what is called a guardian angel before we can really be redeemed through the whole process of initiation. This is symbolized in the myth of Perseus and a lot of other things like that, where a woman who's chained to a rock, just as our soul nature is chained to the earth by cause and consequence, being attacked by the beast, and only the hero can save. The hero has to attack the monster head on. Then we have the story of Poseidon and Doris, all the Nereids. Poseidon is ugly. Venus wouldn't even sleep with him because he was so ugly. What we're talking about here is unredeemed creative imagination. Everything that is done in Pisces subtly becomes a form. And if we have selfish imagination, it becomes a hideous form. And that hideous form becomes the soul of a phobia. So that people who are fantastics are usually phobics at the same time. And this is another, this is sort of like the same story as Andromeda chained to a rock. You have to get past all of the appearances before you can win that inner kind of beauty. And so that's what all of this is. Camouflage are really thoughts that we have thought in the past and have been so distorted by our thought process that the original principle, which is a divine principle, is lost. And so it's camouflaged. We can't see something for what it is. There's a lot more, but I think I'm going to pass so this doesn't become too long. The prophecies for Zebulun. Zebulun shall dwell in the haven of the sea, and he shall be a haven for ships. Both the idea of safety in that state that we call a haven, that is a protected cove or something of that nature, is a Pisces quality. Seasonally, which means it has something in common with two seasons. It is anticipating a seasonal change. It is a letting go of or a relaxation from winter, but still there is privation and there's sacrifice and suffering. It's the time, like now, of Lent. All of the stores from last summer are used up and there's famine. Waters begin to flow as the ice melts, and there are mudslides and floods, and of course here in Madison, potholes, because the weather these days is schizophrenic. It's very Pisces-like. At night it wants to freeze, and in the daytime it wants to thaw, and the combination of freezing and thawing produces those potholes. But also at the same time that we're suffering at this time of the season, there is an anticipation. There is a faith to be able to get through all of this privation and to make it to the bountiful springtime. So there is a tendency to surrender and sacrifice and to give oneself up to something that one can't control, except if we want to control it by putting all kinds of preservatives in our food and poisoning ourselves to death, but that's another side of Pisces. too bad we have also few people here tonight. I have all these things I'd like to share, and I'm in that kind of mood that I'd like to pull all kinds of stops. Last time when we looked at Aquarius, we looked at the transcendence of transcendence to a realm of pure, lucid light of truth. Well, Pisces is a simple transcendence like Sagittarius is, but in a much different way. Sagittarius was a transcendence to ideas and principles in an aspirational sense. Pisces is a transcendence to all ideas all at the same time, all mixed together. And it represents the roots of creation, where all the principles are as one thing. And that is a state that is called chaos. It is a very sensitive chaos because the least little perturbation can bring a kind of order to it if it is sustained. And it is a holy chaos because the experience of it is an experience of reverence. If nothing else, it blows your consciousness just to be aware of all of those things at the same time. Now, the cosmological psychology of Pisces is different than the cosmological psychology of Cancer. Cancer also dealt with things that were subconscious, but Cancer wanted to keep things as integral wholes. It wanted to keep everything in the womb, or like something that it's hatching and it keeps on hatching it, but it never wants it to be born. Pisces realizes in its psychology that everything is there. And it is dazed in a kind of worshipful awe. Not the awe that is the awe that you're stunned by the knowledge that is like Aquarius, but a worshipful kind of awe. And so you're something like in a stupor or in a torpor by everything being there. And that is where people who are touchstones to Pisces consciousness are important. Some people can touch on things that Pisces knew was there all along, but they just never separated it out of the chaos. And those are very valuable people to Pisces people. There is an initial chaos where everything is all mixed together, and that by applying simple principles, you bring cosmos and you bring an ordered universe. And there is a terminal chaos, because it's like if you're learning music, you start out with a very simple rhythm and you start out with a very simple melody like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and you keep adding more things and more things and more things until ultimately you are approaching a terminal chaos where you can't differentiate things anymore because things have gotten way too big. However, the Pisces consciousness can do it sometimes, because this is that kind of strange creative genius. And they can hold it all together because there's often a humility that goes with this. Because when you have your consciousness blown like that, you're humble, and in your humility, you're not using all your psychic energy to sustain the ego. You can use it then to understand and grasp the bigger kinds of things. If a person has faith, they're relaxed. And they rest. And in that relaxation, they can collapse and let go of themselves and expand right into chaos. So what we're talking about here with Pisces, a really good key word, is the key word reunion. It is a reunion with the all. And so everything is all put together. And sometimes that reunion is a retreat from the material world. We're talking here about refuge, a refuge where one can escape it all and put together all those poetic connections that only poets can do. However, one cannot ever completely surrender without losing one's identity. And so there is sometimes a tendency to want to disintegrate. And so what happens is this disintegration is too complete. And it is what the psychologists, especially like Carl Jung, call the fractionation of the soul, where things get broken into different parts and they can act on their own and they can be manipulated, like in mediumship or in multiple personalities or things like this. All of the watery signs are very introversive. And in doing that, there is something in their feelings, especially in Pisces, that there is a surrender. And the surrender takes you into chaos. And with Pisces, it's so complete that it's idiotic. I once saw a movie of a life of an Indian saint, and they showed other people that got waylaid along the way. And there was this one man that was running with the dogs, and he had attained to what he thought was a holy state. And in that holy state, he was so non-discriminating that he could not differentiate between animals and humans. And, you know, like he was in a really degraded state, and he didn't seem to me to have any spiritual joy. He may have had some kind of a silly kind of intoxication, self-intoxication that occurs in some kinds of spiritual states, but it was not pleasant to me. You can indulge in the negativity of each of the watery signs. And each of the watery signs does that. Indulgence in personal pain is what Cancer does, and it is masochistic. Scorpio indulges in culpability, especially in its relations with others. And so Scorpio becomes guilty It becomes a guilt monger in itself, and it even lays guilt trips on other people. But the way it works with Pisces, there is an indulgence in the general pain and in the general discomfort for all of society. And one expands one's ego to the suffering of all of society. So Pisces is the sign of martyrdom. And so there's often a lot of martyristic actions, even in a simple relationship. So this is the sign, as we've been saying, of collapse. The last signs in the mandala, the last four signs, Plato says the highest state would be where you have a philosopher king. But after that, you have a tyrant. And after that, things degrade into democracy, which to Plato was the same thing as anarchy. And after that, you have the collapse of society. So in the last four signs of the zodiac, or the last four partitions of the mandala that include signs and houses, you have a statement of Plato's philosophy of government and how, what makes it good and what falls, what causes it to fall. So we're talking here about a sign that is keenly aware of suffering, of sorrow, and of grief. And it's willing to be selfless in that. So this is a sign of compassion. Now you can deal with this in various ways. You can see the suffering as leading to something spiritual. And this can mean a surrender to spiritual consciousness. However, if there's a collapse and there's a breakdown of consciousness and one becomes intoxicated psychologically or involved with illusion or delusion or something like that, it is a negative type of quality. Those who can deal with divine intent, especially the divine intent in chaos, are said to drink the divine wine. So there is a glorification in this, but if it becomes negative, it becomes some kind of a mystification, or it becomes nonsense, or this is the sign of superstition. I'm going to have to skip some. This letting go is something one must be wary of, because wherever Pisces is in your chart is where you're likely to lose it and where you're likely to just puddle into some kind of a state of nothingness. Let's look at a few philosophical ideas. For better or worse, this is the philosophy of non-discrimination. Sometimes in our discrimination, in our scientific thinking, or in our organizational consciousness, we go too far. And in that, because things are logical or because things are orderly, we are satisfied with that. But we need people who do not make those same kinds of discriminations, because they can make connections that people who are making assumptions do not make. They don't have those barriers. So you have to be able in yourself to suspend judgment and to suspend organization and to suspend discrimination, but you have to know in doing that that you're doing this in a spiritually intuitive way and you're not just being careless and putting yourself into a clown-like state philosophically. This is a state of wanting to be selfless. And in that, again, you're open to everything. But if it's a negative kind of selflessness, you let down all the barriers. And that can be either things like allergies or mediumistic things or things like that. Or it can be artistic things that you see that no one else sees. And sometimes there's a special kind of egoism that we find with this, my ego is non-discriminate. And you run into Pisces people who are self-identified with Pisces, and they say, I don't have a nature, and anything that happens is you. I'm just a mirror of you. And it's a it's one of those things, it's like trying to pin down a fish again with a bowling pin, in fact. You just can't do it. This is also sometimes a philosophy of active passivism. A master of this kind of philosophy would be Lao Tzu, who owns everything by owning nothing. Or he talks about the state of spiritual being that appears to, that accomplishes everything while appearing to do nothing. So if there is, with this kind of consciousness, if there is a listening and not resisting to what's coming in, that's wonderful. But if it's just plain laziness, it's dangerous. You fall prey to any kind of thing almost. So if it's done lovingly, this is a philosophy of winning by losing. Maybe I should do that with the blackboard. Maybe I should let all of those menus stay up there and win by losing. This is the philosophy of the light touch. It is trying to do things with infinite lightness. And it is, whether it is the impressionism in art or if it is something that becomes so light that it becomes undiscernible, it becomes ultimately powerful. This is the philosophy behind homeopathy. Some things are dissolved, and they're made more and more dilute, but in the process of dilution, they become more subtle and their power becomes more universal. I don't know much about homeopathy, so I don't know about its effectiveness, so I can't comment on that. Obviously, it's a philosophy of being many things to many people. It's great for adaptation. If you can take on almost any kind of character. But if it's done shallowly, you can be confused. You have to be able to know yourself to not get lost in all kinds of other characters. It's a philosophy of believing all things possible. And it's funny, the thing and its opposite are there. At the same time that it believes all things are possible, it's a very fatalistic sign. And it sometimes gives up really quickly. Why should I do anything? It's all going to pieces anyway. So this is the sign then of saints who accept anything. It's also the sign of somebody who is a sucker or a gull or a fish because of that same reason. And it is partially how things are accomplished, especially healing. All of the water signs have to do with healing. And there are two elements to healing that have to be balanced. One is you have to feel the suffering of the patient, because that is what drives your prayer to be able to bring through the divine creative energy. And that kind of compassion is what Pisces excels at. The other thing is, you have to be able to take the divine energy and willfully command it. And Scorpio does excellently at that, but it's not always so compassionate, which is why the more remarkable healers usually have strong foci in Cancer, which has a nice blend and a nice balance of both feeling full compassion and the ability to take action. Obviously, if we are leaving our physical human status and are going to the divine, this is the sign of retreat. And so this is the sign that is a retreat into anything, whether it is an escapist retreat or whether it is something more regenerative. Sometimes it's an escape into drugs or things of that order. It's also philosophy of recomposition. I don't know how to say it. Like hyper-refinement, which is what distillation is. All of those types of qualities that reconstitute something by a kind of super-refinement is what is ruled by Pisces. Of course, Pisces people try to make their lives and their personalities hothouse plants, and then they become very vulnerable. This is one of the signs of inversion, especially inversion of getting things spiritually backward. There are people that think all spiritual phenomena are complete. These are people who speak in tongues and think that because they speak in tongues, whether they know what it means or not, they think that this is a complete spiritual experience. This is a sign that's willing to believe that glamour is beauty. It's again the thing and its opposite, mixed together. It's a sign that sometimes likes illusion more than reality. And we find that a lot now in movies. People like the special effects rather than an honest story that has something redemptive in it. So it's the sign of camouflage, fakery, counterfeiting, feigned insanity becoming real insanity, and all of those kinds of things. Sometimes it's a philosophy of weakness is good. And sometimes it works extremely well. Passive resistance. Gandhi's idea of no resistance at all is a wonderful idea. Sometimes it is a worshiping of dereliction. I've seen people praise the derelicts laying on the street, because they are the most humble of all human beings. They have no pretensions about themselves. They don't have anything else either, but so that's sometimes a little bit misplaced. So there are a lot of polar extremes. Beauty and ugliness, goodness in both success and failure. And in general, one can have a very relativist kind of philosophy. It's a tired out sign. It's an apathy. It doesn't make any difference anyway. This philosophy or this outlook on life is as good as any others. Now, there is something valuable to relativism. We have Einstein's whole theory of relativity, which helps us to see the universe in a very good way. But if it's combined with apathy, wow. This is also a sign that can use elaborate alibis for laziness. And it's also a sign that can do things by very, very gradual changes. The best example I can think of it is a story that I heard from a man that used to be in the big band days. And Joe Venuti was one of the first jazz violinists. And he was really a character. And he roomed with the blind man who was the piano player. I believe it was in the Paul Whiteman Orchestra. And at night, when they had nothing more to do, he would take a razor blade and very carefully shave off the smallest amount that he could off of the blind man's cane. And the blind man, as sensitive as he was, didn't notice it. And after a few weeks, Joe Venuti has the cheek to say to him, "By golly, George, I believe you're getting taller." It's a great kind of outlook. Nature forces, solution and absorption, not salinity like cancer in the ocean, and not like etching, which is like Scorpio, but more like homeopathic dilutions, and especially tears. Tears are a dilution of all of the feelings, and it's like the consciousness of representation of the total. That is to say, one drop of the ocean tells you what the whole ocean is like. Some forces of decay, not the fungi like Taurus, and not the hot breakdown like Scorpio, like rotting things due to bacteria, but some products of fermentation and the distillation that comes afterwards. This is not necessarily the sign of teetotalers. Intentional vaporization of liquids. Not evaporation, which is more like Aquarius, but more like distillation or the refining of perfume or something like that. This is the sign also of a change of consciousness by poisoning, which is what we call intoxication. It is sort of like drinking and drugs and things like that. It's also obviously the sign of partial condensation and what we do with it, clouds and the images in clouds and the things that they suggest for us. Anatomically or physiologically, it represents all paranormal states of bioconsciousness in human beings. Coma, anesthesia, trance, shock, catalepsy, euphoria, any of those things are ruled by Pisces. Constant reflex sensitivity, especially through the feet. There are people that walk on the earth and they can tell you what's happening in the earth through that kind of sensitivity through the nerve endings in the bottom of the feet. It's heat control through vaporization, sweating, things like that. Vulnerability, chills, exposure. It rules the feet and pedicular articulation, if you like that. That's a nice set of words to put together to test your tongue. And it's also winning by losing as being the immune system. You get sick and you lose, but in the long run, you develop immunity, sometimes to a whole family of illnesses. Potential positives, a belief that when things happen, it's God's will. A faith, a belief in prophetically foreshown things. Good as the will of all. Good is what promotes selflessness or surrender or sacrifice. Those are all big words. Good as what promotes faith or sensitivity or understanding. Good as compassion. The motive is to inspire beauty or holiness in other people. Another motive is to share insight. Sometimes it is a motive to share consciousness, because that's what clairvoyance is. You put your consciousness into some other being in such a way that you experience its consciousness and you experience your consciousness and the oversight of yourself experiencing that other consciousness. It's quite a wonderful thing. It's a philosophy of passivism, and sometimes it's a philosophy of fate, kismet, destiny. A philosophy of credulity, I'll believe anything. And above all, compassion for compassion's sake. Potential negatives, convolution. It can twist and it can distort and it can complexify almost anything so that you can't recognize it anymore. It's also a sign that overdoes, to collapse or to exhaustion or exaggeration at least. Another potential negative is laziness, cowardliness, intentional languor. Another negativity is a tendency to want to weirdify things. If it isn't eerie, it isn't good. Everything in the world is just too prosaic. It needs to be spiced up a little bit. Sometimes it glorifies suffering, misery, or poverty. And another side that we haven't talked much about, and it's a really invidious side, it's capable of treachery, of deception, of very great misleading, forgery or fraud. Sometimes it's the philosophy of crazy is good. It's a negative sign. It's very introvertive, very retreative, very passive, but also very pliable. As attribute, it's a common sign. It's extremely adaptable. It's extremely changeable. It flows and it's willing to take on a formless state. By element, it is water. Water in unusual states, partial condensation, selective vaporization, clouds, and one of the best words for Pisces sometimes, fogs. The ruler, there are two rulers. Jupiter rules enlargement and abstraction and relaxation and piety. Neptune rules divinity and instrumentalization and spirituality. Mercury has its detriment there. It doesn't like the vagaries, and it doesn't like the tendencies to what it is willing to jump to conclusions as being superstitions, and it doesn't like illusory facts. Exaltation, Venus has its exaltation. And the quality, that special quality that comes out of Venus is loving sacrifice. The perfect set of words for Venus in Pisces is, the rose never smells as sweet as when it is crushed. And that's that perfect description of it. Mercury also has its fall there. It doesn't, you know, it's mentally weak. And it's too prone to speak out of opinion rather than out of fact. People who have the sun in Pisces, Hugo Black, very compassionate and very unpredictable. Here's somebody that was very mythical, very exotic, Maurice Ravel. Here's one that was druggy and dark and such. There's a movie going around about him now, Johnny Cash. Here's one that is imaginative and extremely convoluted. He has sentences. I think he has the record sentence. I've got a list of it somewhere. I think there's something like 120 semicolons in it and 80 commas and such. Victor Hugo. Ultimate Pisces. Here's one that was weak and pathetic, Jean Harlow. She was like a goddess, a mysterious goddess, but she was just weak. Here's one that was associated with the bubbly and with that sort of shallow Pisces way, Lawrence Welk. Here's one that was very feelingful and very attuned to sound, Alexander Bell. And Pisces is known for its lies, but they're exaggerated lies. They're not fib lies like Mercury, but one of the world's greatest liars was a Pisces, Adolphe Manjou. You ever heard of him? Oh, he's a crazy man. Here's somebody that had very great emotional appeal and could turn the hearts of many people to whatever he wanted to. John Calhoun, the famous debater. Here's somebody that was a sucker. She was insecure, and she fell in love with people who were strong. Patty Hearst. Here's somebody who was very, very extremely liberal. Anything goes. Geraldine Farrar. Here's one that was a fool and a fall guy, and just plain silly. A goose if ever there was a man. Jerry Lewis. Treachery. Molotov, fakery, Sybil Leek. Very dramatic emotions Marian Anderson. Erie, one of my very favorite people. I wish I could get CDs of her. I should look on the net and see if they're available. Buffy St. Marie. To the Sea, Winslow Homer. Very Sensitive, Harry Belafonte. Humane, Frank Buck. Fruitful Genius, who could use his imagination to produce animal, new plant forms without having to do genetic manipulation. Luther Burbank. Here, probably one of the most delicate and imaginative writers of a half a century, Anais Nin. Now, we said that each of the common signs had its own gunslinger. We said that the fastest gun was Wild Bill Hickok, and that the dirty-dealing Jesse James was ruled by Virgo, and that Billy the Kid was ruled by Sagittarius, but Wyatt Earp is ruled. Let me have a shot of whiskey before I shoot you. Here's somebody very dreamy and very relativistic. Einstein was a Pisces. Somebody very symbolic and made up his own symbolic conventions, Blackwood. Mysterious, Rimsky-Korsakov. Compassionate, to the point that he just lets go, Edward Kennedy. Here's probably an alcoholic, a man that loved the sea, but a man that had a stupendous imagination. And I think he's written the best American novel that there has been, John Steinbeck. I would recommend it. If you really want to hear about everything in human life, read East of Eden. It's stupendous. Here's somebody that is strange and has to be careful. She can't let go of herself. She gets in all kinds of trouble. Liza Minnelli. Very, very delicate, Renoir. Extremely sentimental, Nat King Cole. Poetically positive, she can make anything sound positive, Edna St. Vincent Millay. Refined, Chopin. The excitable martyr, Lou Costello. The dreamy one, who I guess died trying to get alcohol, Glenn Miller. The liberal, who was also unpredictable, Earl Warren. Here's one that believes humbug is good. Hank Ketchum, the man who writes Dennis the Menace. Compassionate, and she really is, Elizabeth Taylor. Dreamy and drinky, Nancy Wilson. The Romance of the Sea and Everything Else, Admiral Nimitz. The Common Man, Ralph Nader. Faddish, Adele Davis. Visionary, George Washington. Weak but otherworldly, George Harrison. Very mystical, Manly Hall. Imaginative projection, Mercator. Delusioned, Meher Baba. Imaginative and decadent, Ovid. I don't know how to say, describe this person. I'll just give his name and you can make your own pictures. Fats Domino. Emotional and pictorial, Michelangelo. The counterfeiter, the man who wrote all those counterfeiting books, George Plimpton. Elizabeth Browning, sensitivity and sentimentality, and probably the greatest universal genius of the 20th century, Rudolf Steiner. There wasn't anything that he couldn't touch and be a genius in, and he could associate his consciousness with just about all things. In the abstract, fish. Together with the eighth house, astrologers, cosmeticians, camouflagers, distillers, somnambulism, fishing and whaling, counterfeiting, imitations, bartenders, monasteries, insanity and trends in mental health, naturalists, foreigners, the gods, anesthesia, ascetics, aesthetics, drug manufacturer, the cinema, genius at large, asylum, addicts, sensitives, mediums, prisoners, occultism, burnouts, psychedelics, fakes, and psychism. If Pisces India is the ascendant, there are various different kinds of things you can look for. Often, they're very large and very round. The Polynesian body is often a Pisces body because it has those baleful looks on its face. Sometimes it is very skinny, but it's weird and delicate. With Pisces rising, you often find tiny little like baby teeth and mournful eyes, or sometimes big fish-like eyes. They can be heavy either with fat or with water, but most likely water. They're likely to have the cupped, depressive nose. Their bodies are likely to be very soft and wide-set eyes, even in the slender ones. With Pisces rising, they're very excitable people, and they're very uncomfortable around high-pitched sounds. Sometimes they have a flat, depressed nose, and it's not usually a strong physical sign. It's usually weak. If they're females or transsexuals, they make up overly much. Very often, they waddle in a duck-like way. And Pisces rising is easily entranceable. And there's low stamina. And then there's a special definition that I call SCME, short and chubby with mediumistic eyes. It's when you see it, you recognize right off it's Pisces rising. Baby faces are Pisces rising, though sometimes that crosses over into Virgo rising too. Very sensitive, often very shy, and Pisces rising is the sign that's most likely to cross eyes. And wide spaces between the teeth. And often there's a very lazy walk, and very often they're tending to energy vampirization. The 12th house represents opportunities to retreat, either to solve universal problems or to be a universal problem. Detention centers, prisons, hospitals, however, artist studios and laboratories and monasteries, even exiles are the 12th house. Opportunities to experience ripened self-limitations from things you haven't let go from the past. 12th house indicates tendencies to inhibitions, to personal darknesses, to confinements, either physical or psychological, restrictions, things that you undo yourself with, limitations. The 12th house also represents opportunities to experience direct ties to past lives, either in overripe destiny or special talents. Usually it's carryovers from the immediate past life, especially if the same sign is on the 12th house as is on the first house. Opportunities to superconscious experience the gods or the higher worlds. Retreats, invisible friends or helpers, even secret enemies, even intrigue. Opportunities of a kind of things that you have to do. Involuntary service, like the draft, duties, handicaps, and even being enslaved. In mundane astrology or horary, vicissitudes, martyrdom, reformatories, research, ambushes, relief societies, floods, suicide rates, conspiracies, spiritual retreats, plots, slaves in slavery, including white slavery, plagues, drugs and drug tendencies, treacheries, hospitals and asylums, blackmail, general suffering, famine, espionage, exiles, sanatoria, social deterioration, swindles, what insurance policies call acts of God, assassinations. If it is a two-house system, the lower house is ruled by the 12th house. Penal institution, crime and crime rates, precautions, spies, escapes, meditation tendencies. That's it. Next week, what we will do is we will have a lot of fun learning techniques to understand the zodiac as a whole. And so it will be a time of looking at all the signs together in relation to each other. And it'll be a fun time. Bring your friends in, bring your enemies.
I had a menu, he erased it.
Every time.